This is episode 8, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Hey everyone, this is Barbara, your host and the founder of Trashy Beauty, the company looking to repurpose waste into beauty products and get you to rethink what you throw in the trash. We just finished up at the Lightfoot Market this weekend, where over 1,500 conscious consumers came to support local and sustainable. Thank you to everyone who came out to support our cause and everyone who purchased the Trashy Beauty Repurposed Coffee Body Scrub. We're looking forward to seeing your pictures and also hearing how you're enjoying getting dirty in the shower. We had an amazing time chatting with all of you at the market and being surrounded by beautiful people who are working towards a sustainable future. A special shout to Chloe at Onkali for keeping us well-fed all weekend. Her refillable glass jar meals can be found at her brick-and-mortar shop near NYU. And also Sarah at The Fillery. The Fillery Brooklyn is a package-free bookstore where you can purchase everything you need to live a sustainable, package-free life. Sarah carries everything from nuts and make-your-own granola to DIY cleaning supply kits. Check out what's going on with their brands in the show notes. Also, special thanks to my good friends Elise and Michelina for helping out at the market. The level of support that I've received from my friends has been incredible. I could not do this without you or the beautiful listeners who listen to this podcast. So thanks again for tuning in. And we're looking forward to having many more episodes and events to meet all of you. Today's episode features Jenny O'Grady-Giddy. She's the founder of Cloudbridge Reserva. It's a self-sustaining reforestation project in the foothills of Mount Chiripo, Costa Rica. Originally from South Africa, Jenny has spent a significant amount of time in Costa Rica and New York, as well as Canada. She and her late husband, Ian Giddy, bought 700 acres of land in Costa Rica's cloud forest with the intention of helping the forest regenerate. When the couple grew tired of waiting for nature to do her thing, they eventually began reforestation work that continues today. The project runs on donations and the help of international volunteers and researchers. Today, the reserve is home to all six of Costa Rica's endangered feline species and other rare animals, such as the bear tapirs and black-handed spider monkeys. Jenny tells us how she came to be inspired by her home country of Canada and the trip that Jenny tells us how she came to be inspired by the beauty of Canada and the trip that led to the existence of this incredible reforestation project. If you've ever tried to find volunteer work in Central and South America, you'll know that it can be very expensive. At Cloudbridge, they've worked to build a program that's accessible and affordable. Their goal is to inspire a new generation of eco-warriors to help care for the earth. The funny thing is, this story is a bit of a love story. Jenny founded the Cloudbridge with her late husband, Ian, and it was together that they managed to manifest their dreams of helping restore one small piece of the planet. Now, let's get trash talking.
Jenny, just to get started, if you could just tell us a little bit about where you're from and how it came to be that you own this beautiful 700 acres of land in Costa Rica.
I was born in South Africa, but I moved to Canada as a young adult. I subsequently left Vancouver to move to New York to marry Ian Giddy. Ian and I had dated when we were teenagers, and we were separated for 30 years, and we reconnected and found that we still both shared the passion for the environment that we'd had as teenagers. Ian also liked climbing mountains. I would follow him around the world, trudging up mountains behind him. And I had always wanted to visit Costa Rica. So I found a mountain that I thought he'll enjoy climbing this, and it was Mount Chiripo. At the end of 2001, it was a tough year for New York, and we found solace in nature, and we climbed Chiripo, and when we were coming down, we stopped and looked around over this beautiful valley, And Ian said, look at all the deforestation. Why don't we come back and we'll buy some land and just let the trees grow? So we went back a few months later and we drove around Costa Rica and coincidentally ended up finding property on the slopes of Mount Chiripo. Ian was far too energetic to just let the trees grow, so we started a reforestation program and started planting trees. I think now, about 15 years later, we've planted over 40,000 trees.
Wow, that's amazing.
They're all native to the area and to that altitude, which is really important. Otherwise, you know, sea level trees wouldn't thrive so high up in the cloud forest.
That's fantastic. So where did your inspiration come from wanting to help conserve this area and restore it to its natural state?
Well, I think what initially inspired both of us was growing up in a time and place where we spent a lot of time outdoors climbing trees, catching lizards, spent a lot of time poking about in rock pools, and I used to walk for hours through the fields and forests with my dog. I think this initially gave me a love of the outdoors, the creatures. Then in the late 80s, I took a job at Environment Canada as research librarian. And through the research I was doing there, the scientific articles I was reading, I became aware of the vulnerability of the environment and the impending threat of global climate change. At that stage, friends and I were often talked about our desire to buy some land and protect the trees from the sawmills in British Columbia. But it was only later when I met Ian that I found somebody equally passionate and with the ability to bring about this desire that we both had.
That's fantastic. I just want to go back a little bit even further. So you took this job with Environment Canada. What sparked your interest in taking this position at the research library?
I was a science librarian. I'd worked in the medical and environmental field in Toronto. And when we moved to Vancouver, through networking, I think I was able to secure this position. That's where I learned so much.
That's really fantastic. Networking is obviously a very great tool to to find the job that you love. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in this position?
Trying to understand all the toxicology reports and giving the scientists who requested the data exactly what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
As I hadn't had any background in chemistry, but I guess from that aspect, I had to learn on the job.
What's one of the biggest environmental issues that you hope to change in your lifetime?
I hope that through education, we can try and change the attitudes of some people who are still climate deniers. The education that the young researchers at CloudBridge get about the importance of cloud forests and planting trees and preserving habitat, we hope that each of them will take back to their countries these ideas and perhaps be able to influence politicians and policies in their own countries so that politicians might accept the reality of climate change and hopefully institute new policies such as a carbon tax, subsidies for renewable sources of energy, and maybe through these changes, we might be able to slow down the effects of climate change that are all too visible every day in the world.
Yeah, and actually, let's talk about that volunteer project a little bit.
The researchers and volunteers who come to CloudBridge are generally very dedicated to helping wherever they can. I'm amazed at their dynamism and energy because they do have to get up very early, hike thousands of feet uphill into the mountains and check the camera traps, count birds, go on night hikes, play recordings of owls, and listen to who calls back.
Yeah, I remember early in the morning whenever I'd be out hiking in Cloud Bridge and run to some of the volunteers. It would be like 10 a.m. They're like, yeah, we've been up for about 6 hours.
Yes, right. It's pretty tough.
Who are some of your role models, the people that you look up to?
In Canada, Elizabeth May is the leader of the Green Party, and she is an amazing woman, brilliant and dedicated to bringing about change in Canadian environmental policies. Elon Musk, founder of Tesla and SolarCity, he's a visionary, and he has the energy and financial know-all to help change the world. And I have a good friend in British Columbia who is a role model for me, Maureen Bodhi. She set aside her family responsibilities to dedicating herself to organizing a branch of the Green Party in British Columbia. She really sets an example of treading lightly upon the earth.
What are three tips that you have for people who do want to live a more sustainable lifestyle?
Try and drive a more environmentally friendly car, and if possible, change their source of home energy to a renewable source, such as solar panels or geothermal. And if that isn't possible, you check off the box on your electric bill to help support wind power. As you know, CloudBridge is self-sustaining, as we have micro hydro from a stream, mm-hmm. and we have solar panels. And also, I think very importantly, people should vote for environmentally supportive politicians.
Cool, fantastic. What is the most important part about having CloudBridge there? Like, why is it so important to you, and why is it important globally? Like, why should people care about the fact that, like, places like CloudBridge exist?
We actually particularly wanted to focus on the cloud forest, because cloud forest areas comprise I think it's less than 3% of the Earth's surface. So it's a very tiny part of the environmental ecozones. But as the lower areas become hotter and hotter, it's providing a refuge for animals and birds and plants that we are now seeing appearing at our altitude. I also think that wherever we can, we should preserve natural habitat for birds and animals, as so much of their habitat is being lost to monoculture plantations and, of course, urban spread.
And on that, I was going to ask you, Costa Rica, there's a lot of very unique species that are quite fantastic, because Costa Rica is one of the greenest countries when it comes to policy and how they treat the environment. What's been one of the most amazing nature moments that you've had while you're down there?
Oh, this happened several years ago. Ian and I were hiking high up in the mountains at CloudBridge when suddenly we saw the most beautiful bird, a resplendent quetzal. It was flying below us, over the valley and the waterfall. It was such a transcendent moment, and it was our first glimpse of the quetzal. It gave us a feeling that all the challenges were worthwhile, as since then we have seen other animals and birds return to the reforested areas.
I had the unique pleasure of seeing one as well, and for our audience who doesn't know what a resplendent quetzal is, it's a bird that lives in central and northern parts of South America, and it has a very long tail and iridescent colors to it. And it's really amazing when you see one. It's quite incredible, because it doesn't look like it really belongs in this world. It looks like something that comes out of a fantasy movie.
Yes, right.
So what is something that you hope to accomplish in your lifetime with CloudBridge and the project that you started?
I'd like to leave a little corner of the world a better place than I found it, and inspire hundreds of the young volunteers who've worked at CloudBridge to take home with them the important ideas about protecting the environment and restoring habitat to wilderness. I just wanted to say that the success of CloudBridge really depends on all the people who work there. Tom, the manager, and Zinda, his wife, and Frank, the young manager, Jen, the scientific coordinator, Beth, the biologist, and our two local employees who've helped us so much, Edgar and Oscar.
I want to speak to this because this is a very unique project. I found when I was traveling around the world that as I wanted to get into conservation projects, it was quite difficult to because of finances. There are a lot of projects that I looked up that required a huge amount of buy-in, and I found that those projects were not as green as some of the other projects that I worked on where they don't require a huge buy-in. So if you could actually just talk a little bit about how you guys have structured this volunteer project, because the volunteers, when they come, they get to stay in these houses that you have.
Our goal was always to make it affordable for researchers and volunteers of any age. And from what we've seen elsewhere, a lot of the environmental projects are quite demanding of people's resources. It's been a challenge for us, particularly for me since Ian passed away. But I still believe in trying to make it affordable, and entrance to the reserves is free, though we do ask for a donation.
Speaking a little bit more about the resources then, so how does the project get its funding?
I've been a principal funder over the years, but gradually CloudBridge has become self-sustaining as the researchers do donate funds, which offsets their accommodation costs.
Cool. And how long did it take for you guys to reach that point in the project?
Probably about 14 years.
So not a huge chunk of time when you think about it being kind of like an investment.
Yeah, as an investment in the world, it's definitely worthwhile.
What's the way that you keep inspired, and what kind of like drives you on a daily basis? Because I know that especially in conservation work, it can be quite a struggle sometimes to hear about other things that are going on in the world and to keep at it, even though you're doing, you know, something in such a small part of the world.
Reading the blog, Linda and Beth provide a blog every month about CloudBridge, and every month I read about a young volunteer who says, my life has been changed by my time at CloudBridge. And I think that really brings it home to me, the importance of this venture and the knowledge that so many animals, birds, and people, such as the staff, the volunteers, the researchers, and even the local community are depending in some way on the success of this endeavor.
Have you ever followed up with a volunteer to see, like, if they've done something more, or if they've gone on to pursue, like, a career in sustainability?
Actually, quite a few of the volunteers have stayed in touch. Many of them have returned to CloudBridge to volunteer again. And some volunteers have never left.
I think you're talking about Frank.
Well, yes, and Sebastian came about 10 years ago. He's now married. He has a little farm and children. You can think of a couple of others. They've either stayed or else they've taken home a souvenir and married him.
That's so fantastic. And how many volunteers have you had total in the lifetime of the project then?
Well, I think probably at this stage we must be over 1,000.
Wow. That's fantastic. When did you start the volunteer project?
Well, we started it immediately, and our first two volunteers were not a success. And it almost made us rethink our idea. We've never had volunteers like those two young men again. Local man who was working for us at the time called them Los Perezosos, sloths, which is So they didn't last long, but we decided to persevere. And I must say, 95% of our volunteers have been wonderful people and really helpful in providing the manpower, woman power, the research and the scientific knowledge that I hope will help other projects, as the scientific reports they provide before they leave CloudBridge are all edited and then uploaded to our website, cloudbridge.org.
Talk a little bit about this mixture of using local workers in the area and also, you know, kind of inspiring locals down there. Costa Rica is kind of known as a very green country, but in general, when I traveled through Central and South America, I found that a lot of people weren't very environmentally aware. How is it that you help integrate some of the local community into the project?
For some years, we've taken part in Bandera Azul, which is a program in Costa Rica, Blue Ribbon program, and you have to follow strict guidelines about recycling, etc. Become involved with the local community through doing that, through going down once a month and working in the recycling shed, stomping on plastic bottles and folding up cardboard. So trying to help the other enterprises, such as the other hotels, with that. I must tell you about one conversation I had with a local young man who actually is an amazing orchid expert. His name is Gabriel Monge, and he told me that before CloudBridge was started, people would just come to the forest and take whatever they wanted, orchids, animals, birds. And he said that after CloudBridge was launched, people started to understand the value of protecting the forests. And I think the local establishments, the hotels, have come to see that CloudBridge brings in a number of tourists, hikers, people who are not necessarily willing to climb 12,000 feet to the top of Chilco. But they enjoy hiking our trails, which we keep clear. And they come to admire the waterfalls and the flowers and the birds. So I think it has had an impact on the local community.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I don't know if I ever told you. So I was trying to plan my trip around Costa Rica with a friend who had 2 weeks of vacation. And we decided we would do the coast and we would do the mountains. And so she started doing some research, trying to find some place that we could stay that was a little bit off the grid and, you know, not too expensive. And we had kind of toyed around with the idea of doing Chirripó, but we didn't have much time. And Chirripó does take a significant amount of time. And so we ended up finding the CloudBridge area and seeing that we could stay in this reserve that was right next to all the trails. And it was just perfect. It's not going to break your budget to stay at CloudBridge.
Good. Oh, I'm so glad you found it.
It was actually through her research that we found it. I actually can't take credit for that. So my friend Megan was the one who ended up finding it. But as soon as we found it, we were like, this is the place. And if you see the pictures online of what the houses look like on the inside, there are these beautiful, tiny little two-story kind of lofted houses, and they sit right on the edge. So when you wake up in the morning, you just get this, once the mist kind of rolls away and the sun kind of breaks through, you just get this fantastic view of this forest, and it's all you're looking at.
Were you able to see some of the pictures from the camera trap?
Yeah, I was staying at down the road doing a work stay at one of the other hostels, which I can attest to that a lot of the tourists are coming to the area, and a lot of people don't understand the ticketing situation for Chirripó, and so they still want to do some hikes. And so I often suggested that they do up to mile 4 and then go down into CloudBridge and do that loop, because that is quite a good, like, half-day hike. I saw some of the camera trap pictures of, like, the jaguars and the tapirs, and I know that there was actually a jaguarundi spotted on our road one of the weeks when I was staying there.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, seeing that jaguar on the camera trap was, oh, one of the highlights of my life. my initials spelled J-A-G. Yeah, it's rare to see them. That was the first time that we'd seen them on a camera trap was this past year. So
that's fantastic. What have been some of the other wins for CloudBridge through the years?
Tapirs. Tapirs are just an amazing creature, and they are so secretive despite their size. We've seen their footprints over the years, but I think we finally caught them on a camera trap too. Interesting thing is seeing creatures that, according to the scientific books, are not supposed to be at that altitude. But I just wonder how much effect climate change is having on these animals and birds as they're coming up, as it's getting hotter and hotter in the lowlands.
And can we go into tapirs a little bit? Because I know it's one of those creatures a lot of people aren't familiar with, but I'm a huge fan. I'm a little obsessed with tapirs. And like kind of speaking of why it's so important that you do know that they are finding refuge in the CloudBridge area.
They're marvelous. They remind me of small hippos in a way. They are so, so unique.
So they play a pretty important role, apparently, because of the way that they eat. They're kind of like elephants. They just eat whole fruits and different things. And so when they move very slowly through the environment, they're kind of like environmental engineers, where they really help spread species and seeds throughout the whole area.
Right, right, yes. When they defecate the seeds out, they help spread different plants throughout, as it's so important to have a mixed forest, you know, and you don't want to plant trees all the same species. And once you get the animals and birds coming back, they do seem to help with that.
Talking about some of the other programs that you have at CloudBridge.
Yes, we have a regular from the Gatton Academy, ranked as one of the best schools in the United States. The quality of the work that these students produce at CloudBridge is incredible. They are very enthusiastic, and they come every year with their professors and teachers. Generally, they go on to the University of Western Kentucky. One of the students who came perhaps 6 or 7 years ago, Clarice, when she graduated, she came back to CloudBridge and did a research program on the gunnera plant and has obtained her PhD and still comes back every year to help with the new Gatton student. We would love to encourage more school groups to come down. We can host them on campus and provide meals and give them intensive environmental education for a week. We also collaborate with another research program down at the coast. And so the teenagers get to spend a week in the cloud forest, and then they spend another week in a coastal ecozone, so they can see the differences between such vastly different types of environment.
Sure, and I guess they're getting a bit of a workout as well, because it's not an easy climbing around the CloudBridge and Chirripó area.
That's true, yes. Yeah. kind of like boot camp.
And what are some of your favorite books or movies or podcasts that have kind of like helped inspire you or educate you on things?
Well, one of my favorite movies was Out of Africa. It was such a beautiful and tragic movie and just gave you the sense of Africa. Ian and I did establish another nature reserve in South Africa, too, in the mountains of the
Witwatersrand.
But I sold that after he passed away. But it was a wonderful place and run along the same lines as CloudBridge. Books, I think Al Gore is a remarkable man. He's his movie An Inconvenient Truth and the follow-up An Inconvenient Sequel are so informative and inspiring, but of course you have to get people to actually watch it. Reading biographies of people, you know, such as reading about everybody knows Jane Goodall, of course, and her chimpanzees. Baruti Galdikas, she's a Canadian researcher who has spent most of her life in the forests of Borneo helping to save the orangutans. And then, of course, Diane Fossey, and with her work with the gorillas. Somebody like Bill McKibben, too, founder of 350.org, is a huge inspiration to me.
What's one of the craziest things that you've ever done in the name of nature and sustainability?
I think it's buying land in a foreign country. It's not without its challenges. Mainly the bureaucracy. My Spanish is not that fluent, so you know, dealing with legal issues in a different language, that's always a challenge. You know, fortunately we have help through our English speaking lawyers. And apart from that, yes, I think climbing the mountains. It's challenging, wading across rivers, getting swept downstream by strong currents. So.
Oh, no.
All for the sake of the environment.
Thank you so much, Jenny, for your time, for sharing your stories. It's definitely a beautiful area of the world. If someone wants to find you or if they would like to visit CloudBridge, where can they find the information?
Have a look at our website, cloudbridge.org. We would love to meet you.
Too. Cool. Fantastic.
Come on out.
Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thank you, Barbara. Take care.
I think that Jenny's story is great because it shows that anyone can make a small difference if they have the drive and passion to make it happen. While 700 acres may not seem like a large portion of the world to protect, the CloudBridge borders Chirripó National Park, and it helps protect an ecosystem that covers less than 4% of the planet. I'd highly encourage you to stay at one of the casitas at CloudBridge, hike this beautiful area, or consider volunteering with Jenny and the team in San Gerardo, Costa Rica on your next vacation. Thank you for joining me for these inspiring interviews with female eco-warriors from around the world. Here, we are learning about the journeys these women have been through and their tips for living a more sustainable lifestyle. So it would really help if you went onto iTunes and subscribed, rate, or shared this podcast to your other eco-warrior friends. It can help spur more people to action. And also, if you think there's an eco-warrior who has a story that would inspire others, feel free to email me. I'm over at barbara@trashybeauty.com, or feel free to Instagram us at trashybeautyco. As always, tune in next week, Eco Warriors, and stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram at trashybeautyco.